Speak up.
You're listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. We're the campus and community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from unceded Coast Salish territories.
Good morning. And welcome to CJSF. You're listening to Speak Up here on Monday, May 26th, 2025. Joining me in the studio, well, my name is Magnus Tiebold. I'm your host for the hour. And joining
Peter
me in the studio,
R.H.
Peter R.H. We got a bunch of stuff for you. We have an interview with Adrian Avendano of the Invasive Species Council of Metro Vancouver. And we're going to talk about invasive species and also about how you can get involved in helping to control them, because they have a whole bunch of programs on that. What are you going to talk about today, Peter?
Well, what I'm going to talk about is there was a UBC program called the Exploring of Concept of Progress in a History.
Mm-hmm.
And it was interesting because no instructor supposedly engaged in philosophical discussion with your peers. So I thought that was an intriguing kind of thing. It wound up that it already happened. I was kind of hoping that I went to the professor at UBC about it. But you know how they have posters and it's already over? Have you seen that, Magnus, in your times around SFU and so on?
Yes.
So what I'm going to do is go what was not part of the course, which is about, interestingly enough, fire was utilized by the human race before the wheel. And actually it was the one even before we're Homo sapien, there is Neanderthal, and actually the one Homo erectus, that was the one that started controlling fire. The wheel's only about 6,000 years old. The people thought it was older. So I'm going to be talking a bit about that. That was sort of out of the sphere of the course outline. I'll go ahead. I got some of the person was funny. It sort of had an instructor in a way. And I was hoping, and supposedly the main student moderator is out of the country right now. I was hoping that she would. Now, the other thing is that the reason I'm doing that is because I was going to do today, if you've heard Guerrilla Radio, they slightly mention Burkina Faso amongst some other countries.
In West Africa.
Now, I was emailed a YouTube posting about this. But I talked, it was another person I know, and some of the information is not quite verified. And I actually, on Sunday, I did a lot of information on this, but I'm going to go to the consulate, hopefully be open this afternoon in downtown Vancouver. So I sort of kind of are changing the topic that I would have done, because I want to make sure that I got the information straight about this. So anyway, so I'm going to be talking about actually the fire and wheel and so on.
Wow, big topics. we also have, of course, Gardening with Embark. And we're going to be talking about getting your corn and pumpkins and squash into the ground, because it is the time for that. But we're going to start things off with a report from Danny, CJSF's Danny Nez Vadarani, about SFU research into indoor plant growing of both blueberry and raspberry crops. Of course, blueberry is a big money-earning agricultural crop here in BC, so we'll start off with that. And we will, and then we're going to head into our interview with Adrian Avendano of the Invasive Species Council of Metro Vancouver. Really interesting talk.
Reporting from Burnaby, BC, this is Danny Nesvadarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM, Burnaby. A team of researchers at Simon Fraser University, led by Professor of Plant Functional Genomics, Jim Mattson, has successfully grown both blueberry and raspberry crops in the university's biotech greenhouse during the winter. This marks a major development in the team's research project, which has been working to identify the environmental conditions best for indoor blueberry and raspberry production. This project also aims to adapt the berries to the new environment through gene editing. CJSF recently took a trip down to the research team's lab, where Jim Mattson gave us a tour of not only the lab facilities, but the biotech greenhouse as well.
And this western red cedar was a very nice tree until a few years ago, and it died from repeated drought stress in the summer. And that's happening all over the campus. Western red cedar is quite drought sensitive. So that's the climate change. And it's actually well on the way for agriculture too, that you need to adjust varieties based on climate change.
So this is the greenhouse. Always quite messy. And also quite hot. Let's see how hot it is.
I guess for the next year, do you foresee this just improving and getting better?
Yes, but we're not doing it here. We're doing it primarily in Chilliwack, and where we have a larger greenhouse. It's highly controlled. We measure all the inputs. We measure the amount of electricity, the amount of natural gas used for heating, and so on, to find out a good compromise, I should say, between growth and cost of producing. So in the end, it's not just science. You have to make it commercially feasible too. Otherwise, it's not going to be used by anyone, so to say.
Another question we had for Mattson was, what was contributing to this project's success? Why were they seeing progress in indoor berry growing that hadn't been seen before?
I think the gene editing is a big part, because it's really hard to change in a short time traits in perennial species in particular. They take years to. It usually takes something like 10 to 20 years to make a new variety, and the changes are usually incremental. And blueberry in particular is really hard, because it has four copies of each gene. And for some traits, you need to knock out not just one copy, but all four. And that can never be done, it's very difficult to do that by traditional breeding, especially since no one knows what gene to look at that happens. So we can do it in a controlled way without changing anything else in the genome, just changing that gene. So that's a big change. There's a revolution, I think, in agriculture, the gene editing. They will not... So transgenics are highly controversial, even though it has been shown that it is safe, and it's too expensive. So it's only the big companies that can pursue them right now. It costs many, many millions, actually tens of millions, to get new varieties approved that are transgenic. So this is sort of the opportunity for breeders of all breeds and species to do something. So it's quite a change. It's not just the big crops like maize and rice and wheat. It's other crops that can be bred in a fairly short time for particular traits without changing the whole genome, so to say, mixing up the whole genome. So that's a big change.
He then went on to explain the mechanisms behind the berry growing process.
So we did a test this winter with both... raspberry and blueberry, primarily blueberry, but raspberry as well, and it worked out surprisingly well. So blueberry, normally they make the flower buds in the late summer, when days are getting shorter and the nights are getting cooler. Then the plant get the signal that it's time to make flower buds, but then they go dormant from the same treatments. When it gets cooler and shorter day, after a while they go dormant, and then they stay dormant until the spring, until about March, April, when the longer days and warmer temperatures make them wake up and start growing again. So the problem is, if you then want to grow them in winter time, you want to induce flower bud formation, but you do not want them to go dormant. Because if they go dormant, they're going to stay. It doesn't matter if you put light on them and high temperature. They're not going to do anything for a few months. So they need a specific time of cold treatment before they start growing again. But if you time it correctly, you can induce flower buds, but they do not go dormant. And that's what we did with the blueberry in the fall. So we took them inside before they went dormant, and then they started growing in. The first one already in September, and we had the first crop in December, with the peak of the crop in January and February.
During our conversation, Mattson also stressed the potential that this project has to progress Canada's domestic agriculture.
Well, we got a grant from the Weston Family Foundation, which is tied, of course, to the Loblaws and so on. They are the owners. Weston is the owners of Loblaws and so on. And what happened a few years ago during COVID, there was problems with import because of the COVID crisis. And this company and other companies and consumers realized that, hey, there can be big disruptions in import of produce, including berries, not just berries, but other too, during events of COVID. And of course now with Trump and his activities, then it's entirely possible that these things will be more expensive too. So it's good to have a domestic production.
Well, there is still much more work that needs to be done to make these berries viable for commercial production. Jim Mattson and his research team are optimistic of the project's future outcomes. Once again, this has been Danny Nezvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM, Burnaby. This segment would not have been possible without the continued support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada's Local Journalism Initiative.
Thank you to Danny for that report. Excuse me. We have, in just a couple of moments, we have our interview with the Invasive Species Council of Metro Vancouver, but first, it is time for Bird Note.
This is Bird Note. I'm Dara Miles Wilson. Grief settles in the body like an overcast sky on a windless day. Heavy, unmoving. At least that's how it felt on the day of my cousin's funeral. On that June morning in Camden, South Carolina, the world felt hushed, aside from my family's tears. Our collective grief colored everything in lackluster gray. Well, almost everything. Shortly after the procession began escorting my cousin to his final resting place, I spotted a flash of vermilion. A red-headed woodpecker appeared mere yards away from me, the first one I had ever seen with my own eyes, or what birders call a lifer. Its vibrant colors were a bright spot on an otherwise dark day. Later, while I walked in the woods on my uncle's property at twilight, an eastern whippoorwill called out from the trees, steadfast and distinct, right as dusk thickened into night. Another lifer, another extraordinary gift. I didn't expect to find joy as I wandered in the wilderness that evening. But joy, as it turns out, appears before us in the most unexpected places at unpredictable times. As I remember my cousin, I hold tightly to this message from the birds I saw. Joy does not wait. It simply arrives, even in the midst of sorrow. For Bird Note, I'm Dara Miles Wilson.
Adrian Evan Danio is the executive director of the Invasive Species Council of Greater Vancouver. You know, in this modern world with so much travel, in every form, trucks going everywhere, people transporting boats, people bringing special exotic plants in. Invasive species are a significant issue and a risk to the natural species of our habitat. I talked to Adrian from the ISCMV.
Did she mention the feral pigs, Magnus?
Hmm?
There's as many these feral pigs in Texas as there are people in Vancouver?
We did not talk about that, and you'll be pleased to know that this conversation is all about invasive species right here in our region. Not talking about problems
well,
elsewhere.
Well, Vancouver Island, a golf course, was... I'll say a few moments after this about the feral pigs, okay?
Perfect. Yeah, so I talked to Adrian just last week, and listen to this report, because not only will you learn a bit about invasive species here in Vancouver, but also how you can get involved in helping to control and mitigate the problems of invasive species. Here's my conversation with Adrian. Joining me now is Adrian Avendano from the Invasive Species Council of Metro Vancouver. And as the organization's name makes clear, you're all about dealing with invasive species. So, well, first off, welcome. Thanks for joining the program.
Thank you. Thank you, Magnus, for the invitation.
Yeah, what are invasive species and why should we care about them?
That's a really good question. So essentially, invasive species are any species from one part of the world that then get introduced to a different part of the world. And in the new area in which they are established, they have significant negative effects on the landscape for a variety of reasons.
Right.
And so there are lots of organisms that are constantly in flux from one place to the other. However, there's a subset of these organisms that when they do arrive in a new area, through a variety of different reasons, they can cause a whole laundry list of different negative impacts.
How much of a problem is that in Vancouver and I guess in British Columbia in general?
So I can't necessarily speak about the direct impact, say like on a provincial wide, like in terms of like a specific metric of like how much this is impacting. But I will say that on a global scale, invasive species are the second greatest threat to biodiversity worldwide. And so essentially invasive species are, a significant issue everywhere. And in the specific context of British Columbia, like we have, over like at least 120 different species that are recognized as being invasive, and a lot of them are being managed in different contexts across the province.
Right. What are the ways in which in invasive species cause problems?
So generally we can think about more or less three general areas that invasive species can impact us. So first of all, there are environmental impacts, then there are health, social, and cultural impacts, and of course, economic impacts. And so specifically, like beginning in the environmental impacts, it really depends on the species in question that we're kind of referring to. However, there are just some general characteristics of these species that that kind of create these negative impacts. And so it can range everything from taking up physical space in an area. So what happens a lot with invasive species, especially plants, is that they can create monocultures in natural areas or areas that aren't actively managed by human beings. And that is great because it creates a loss in biodiversity, and the loss in biodiversity creates imbalances in specific types of ecosystems. And this can affect native species to an area significantly, depending on which, where they are occurring. That's one example, of course, that they're able to change soil chemistry in environments. They can facilitate significant erosion in different environments. A lot of invasive species are fire hazards. And so in the light of the current climate crisis and climate change, it exacerbates these impacts even further. And it really just depends on what species we're talking about and where it's, where they are established. But those are kind of like the environmental impacts. From a health and social cultural perspective, invasive species can cause harm to human health and to wildlife health. So a lot of invasive species are toxic either to ingest or being touched by specific species, So the most common example of this is giant hogweed, which has a photoactive sap, and it also has little like hairs on the leaves and on the stems that if you get close to this plant and you're in contact direct contact with it without any protection, and then you're exposed to sunlight, it creates a chemical reaction that causes really severe lesioning and bruises and burns.
Well, I haven't even heard of that plant.
Yeah. So, and then a lot of them are, you know, just toxic to ingest, for example. So poison hemlock is another one that's highly monitored in the province. And if you eat 6 to 7 leaves, it can be a fatal dose. And of course, this, you know, this goes across the board with other wildlife as well, right. People's pets and the like. And continuing on the health and social cultural aspect, a lot of invasive species can cause damage to infrastructure. So in all types of infrastructure, whether it's transport routes or any activities regarding industrial activities. So in all of the major industries. And as well, there's significant loss to traditional foods and medicines for indigenous communities in the province and across across the world and where they occur. And finally, from an economic perspective as well, the impacts are wide ranged, but they basically impact most of the industrial activity that humans partake in our current society. So from agriculture, farmers can have reduced yields and increased costs to produce their crops. There can be livestock that can be poisoned as a result of having invasive species in around grazing lands. In forestry, it can again reduce yields and also make reforestation efforts really difficult because they take up so much physical space, and so cut blocks are much more difficult to manage. And even things like recreation and tourism. So the impact of invasive species can either close down national parks or decrease access to specific areas. And this recently has happened with the detection of it's an invasive species, but it's a freshwater fish disease called whirling disease. It's a virus. And so currently Yoho National Park is closed because they're quarantining the water body that has been detected to have whirling disease. And so as a result, you know, of course, people aren't working in the park, you know, so there's jobs losses and, you know, less traffic in areas. So, yeah, you can kind of see the different implications.
And people are probably familiar with things like Eurasian milfoil clogging and reducing the recreation possibilities of lakes and stuff.
Exactly. Yeah, absolutely.
We live in a world where there's lots of movement. People are coming and going. And how did the invasive species get here?
Yeah. So, I mean, so that's kind of the main point, and that's the main way that invasive species are able to get around throughout the world is that it's through human activity, right? And so currently in our globalized society in which we live, there's immense amount of material that is transported from one place to another and through all variety of means. You know, from a physical standpoint, invasive species can be carried by land, by wind, by water, by both like natural ways. So as in like, for example, a bird will eat the fruit of an invasive species, the bird flies away. The fruit that the bird ingested goes through its digestive system. It lays its dropping in, who knows, like kilometers away. Right. That plant then propagates, right? And then this kind of continues more on kind of like the modern context, like a lot of invasive species are brought in, on transportation vehicles, so boats, trains, cars, even simple things. Like, for example, if people go out to a hike and maybe they're going off trail for a moment, maybe there's some invasive species material on the grounds in which they're going, and then they leave the park. They don't clean their boots, and then they go to another area. And so that could be a vector of transmission as well. Anything related to the transport of like natural materials. So everything from soil to the plants themselves. The list is quite long.
So really, so many different ways. So the Invasive Species Council of Metro Vancouver, you're focused on this issue. Tell me about mm-hmm. what the mission of the Invasive Species Council is.
Yeah, so essentially our mission is to provide locally sourced and research around best management practices for regionally important invasive species. And as well, we're currently working towards this through our different education and outreach programs. We work with our local governments in our region, and as well different nonprofit organizations and some branches of the federal government in conjunction with these projects. And so the biggest thing that we offer is our best management practice guides and our fact sheets that are available free for access on our website. And we also run lots of different community events. So right now we're kind of in the peak season of doing community stewardship events. So we currently are doing this in Burnaby, in New West, and Delta.
And this is an opportunity for people to get involved, like people listening now and anyone who's interested in the issue.
That's right. Yeah. So essentially we're in different parks where there are presences of different invasive plants. And so we meet up, and for a few hours we're weeding between, you know, kind of the spring and early fall, and then in the later fall season we're revegetating with different native plants. And alongside this, I do a lot of presentations to different groups all across the region. So anywhere from, you know, university classes to garden clubs to public libraries, speaking about the issues that we're talking about today.
So I know your invasive species pulls happen quite often. You're partnering mm-hmm. with Burnaby, I think New West and Delta, mm-hmm. at the very least for regular events. I think the Burnaby events, there's something happening every week.
Yeah, there was more or less. Like now, we're kind of like, if it's not every week, maybe every other week, and mm-hmm. we're in three different areas this year. So, Burnaby Mountain, which we started kind of like at the trailhead on Centennial Road, I believe. And then we're in Central Park. So that's been the big project for the past 3 or 4 years. And then we're in Deer Lake Park and Burnaby Lake Park as well.
And how do people get involved with that or the other community events? Is the information on your website?
Yeah, so all of our events are listed on our website. We have an events page, and it basically just scrolls through all the things that are going on. I will say that our events page also includes events that aren't necessarily run by the Invasive Species Council of Metro Vancouver, but they are run by our community partners in some mm-hmm. shape, way, or form.
So I know, for instance, if people here in Burnaby are interested, they can look on the Burnaby City of Burnaby website for the Burnaby Community Stewardship, I think is the name of the program that runs these, and they can find, and there's a way to sign up there and stuff. I imagine it's kind of a, you know, I mean, you're out there doing good work, but it's probably, you know, a bit of a fun social activities too, with a group of folks and like-minded individuals and stuff.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And that's kind of the biggest like draw for people and also for us to facilitate these events, because it is more than just doing the work on the ground. It's really a way for people to come together and to learn from one another and from the areas in which we work. Absolutely.
Yeah. From what I understand, you also have a way of that people can report where they find invasive species, so that this can be tracked. Can you tell me a bit about that?
Absolutely. So all the reporting that that is available for folks to do is actually through different. There are a few different ways. The first one is, and probably the most important one, is through the Report Invasive BC app. Mm-hmm. And so this is actually the provincial database that people are submitting to. And so that would be my first recommendation, because it kind of goes directly to the folks at the province. And so in the context of our of BC, a lot of the invasive species management is administered through the provincial government, through the Ministry of Forests. And so currently there are a bunch of different staff who are invasive species specialists. And essentially every report that they receive through the Report Invasives BC app goes directly to the corresponding specialist. And so this is important, because there are certain species that have a higher priority mm-hmm. for management and containment. And so any reports being submitted through this platform will get a direct response from said individual.
And what's that app called again, so people can look for it?
It's the Report Invasives BC, and it's it can be found on Android and Apple devices, and there's also an online web page through the province of BC as well.
But obviously the app's going to be great, because you can you see it, you can put that information right in.
It's pretty straightforward. It takes a photo, you can take a photo, and it'll share the coordinates, and you can make any additional notes. And there's kind of the list of all the species.